Now, usually we'd start off with a reading in Alyara and Walpuri. Today's texts actually haven't been translated into those languages yet. So those who feel inspired in the work of translation, start knocking off Proverbs and 1 Kings, eh? That's where it's at. But we will go through this story slowly and surely, and it'll be wonderful. It is really good to do this series. I've been really enjoying this Wisdom in Practice series. For those of you who are joining us for the first time, this series, what we're doing is we're pairing a piece of wisdom literature with an example of that wisdom put into practice in the Bible. And so last Sunday morning, we spoke about trust. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understandings. In all your ways, submit to him and he will make your paths straight. And we looked at Jesus in Gethsemane, with this moment requiring deep trust. And then in our evening service, in our PM service, for those of you who were there, you would know this, but we talked about gentleness. What is gentleness but power under control? We talked about how a gentle answer can turn away wrath, right? And so we talked about that, and today we're going to be talking about another characteristic that is so important as a tool for the journey. After all, that's what wisdom literature is. Wisdom literature, in all its various forms in the Bible, are tools for the journey. These were often little kind of axioms, one-liners. We see a lot of them in Proverbs and in Ecclesiastes and in other places in the Old Testament where there's these particular kind of lines. Sometimes there's contrasts, but there's these little pieces of literature and little pieces of wisdom that were especially important for the nation of Israel as they journeyed through times of exile. That is, times when they were under the oppression of other nations, where they had disobeyed God and been fallen prey to these other nations as a result. And these wisdom literature, these tools for this journey, were going to be so critical for them as they sought to relate to each other, as they sought to relate to God, as they sought to relate to their stuff, whether they had a lot or a little. They were tools for the journey. In fact, in Proverbs 3, the teacher describes it this way. He says, "My son, do not forget my teaching," that is all these pieces of wisdom, "but keep my commands in your heart, for they will prolong your life many years and bring you peace and prosperity," right? And so the writer of this wisdom literature themselves, they say, hey, you kind of fill your life with this stuff. If you choose to live this way, if you choose to embrace these tools, you're going to have a longer life, you're going to have peace and prosperity. Which, of course, and I say this every week, you know, if done with the right mentality, not just a kind of like, you know, self-preservation mentality, I want to prosper and I want it all for me and I want to live a long life for me and my security. If it's done through a God lens, these are good things, right? It's a good thing. We want people to prosper. We want them to have a long life. And we certainly want peace in a world that is often so chaotic. And today's conversation that we're going to be having is around this concept of generosity. And I think it is one of the most relevant conversations in our world because our world loves talking about our stuff, right? Who has it? Who wants it? How long are you going to have it? The way the government's going to take it? You know, people love talking about their stuff, right? And also, one of the main conversations that I have, not just with Christians, but with non-Christians, hey, Josh, is how we navigate our stuff, right? And the stress that is so often associated with our stuff, right? It's actually quite a stressful thing. It was interesting, a couple of days ago, Kez and I and a couple of others from Barefoot Ministries and then DLC, we were running a Red Frog stand at the Newlandia Skate event, right? This was an event that they were running by the council and down for NAIDOC Week. And we were there as Red Frogs. If you're not familiar with Red Frogs, that's okay. But Red Frogs originally arose because of Schoolies Week, right? It was Christians up on the coast saying, hey, we want to protect the schoolies. We want to look after them. And so they jumped in a bus and basically they got people who were intoxicated, got them home safely. They cooked them pancakes in the morning. It was all about loving people really well. Great missional posture, right? No strings attached. Now, we were invited to be Red Frogs for this event, not because there was a whole lot of intoxication going on, but to be a presence that was safe there. And the way that we go about doing it is we hand out Alan's Red Frogs. Like, that's kind of the starting point. Hey, you want a Red Frog? And pretty much no one says no to a Red Frog, right? And But what was interesting is we were there and we're giving away free red frogs and we're giving away free stickers and free oranges and whatever else they wanted us to give away for free. And people were kind of like, is it really free? You know, is it actually free? You know, like suspicious, it's a sticker. Like we can give, surely that's not that generous. You can have the sticker for free, you know. A red frog, yeah, you can have it for free. You know, like just the concept that there could be people within a space just giving stuff away is just a foreign idea. And I feel like that's a picture, right, of how relevant the conversation around stuff is in our world. And suddenly you start talking about our stuff and it becomes more relevant than ever. But at the same time, I want to make sure that today we don't just limit this to money, because sometimes when we think about stuff, we think about just money, right? But there's other sources, resources that we have, and I'm not going to go into this too deeply, except just to get us thinking about the resources we have, right? Because the resources we have aren't just money. We actually have spiritual resource, which takes the form of wisdom and power. We all have relational capital or resource, which is to do with the level of influence and impact that we have. We all have physical capital to greater and lesser extents, measured in time and energy. Some people are like, yeah, I don't have much physical capital right now, right? We have intellectual capital, creativity and insight. And of course, we do have financial capital, dollars and cents. So I say this just to frame things up, because as we talk about generosity and a life of generosity, I don't want us just to think about money. In fact, there will be different times in our life where we don't have much money, right? But we may have other resources that are available to us, and they are not excluded from the wisdom of God and these tools for the journey. So today we'll have application, whether or whatever capital you feel like you may have. And so this is our proverb that we're going to be exploring today, Proverbs 11, 24 to 25. It says, one person gives freely, yet gains even more. Another withholds unduly, but comes to poverty. A generous person will prosper. Whoever refreshes others will be refreshed. Now, just in case you've been burnt before and you're getting nervous, today is not a prosperity gospel message. Just to be absolutely clear, that would be very off-brand for us here at ASBC, right? We're not going down that path at all. But what I will note is that this proverb contains a little bit of a mystery to it, right? I mean, verse 24 kind of challenges the logic of what we will call the world's economy. One person seems to give and yet gain more, and yet another withholds and comes to poverty, right? Like, it's almost a little bit mysterious. How can someone give and yet gain? How can one store up but end up with nothing, right? And so it provides this challenge to the way that the world's economy works. No. Storing up stuff, isn't that like how you acquire, how you end up with a longer life, how you end up with peace, how you end up with prosperity? And again, with wisdom literature, we need to be really careful and know what we're dealing with here. You know, is this providing a guarantee that if you give freely, you will gain even more? Does it guarantee that a generous person will prosper in the ways that we think about prosperity? Or is this proverb actually providing a critique, a challenge to the way that we would otherwise ordinarily think about our stuff? And this is where I want to start today's conversation. The nature of this proverb is that God created us to live by his economy, right? Not the world's. His way of thinking about stuff, not the way the world thinks about stuff. Because you could easily just kind of grab this piece of wisdom literature out of the Bible and then turn it into this kind of prosperity kind of message. But this wisdom is not some sort of mathematical formula in terms of prosperity. This is advice on how to live well. That is to holistically prosper. Holistically, right? To use the language of the actual proverb itself, it's how we discover what it means to find refreshment. Refreshment. And so we're talking about something far deeper here than just stuff. See, wisdom, and this piece of wisdom literature doesn't promise, right, that generosity always makes you materially richer, right? It teaches you that generosity makes you the sort of person who truly prospers, right? You see, I want us to think about it this way by means of contrast, right? While it appears to promise security, the world's economy carries actually what we often call here at ASBC the spirit of empire, right? Because this is the same spirit that we see all the way through the Old Testament when empires are built on the back of slavery and oppression, right? And God's message to Israel as he exiled them from, or exodused them, released them from Egypt was don't become Egypt. Don't become what you just suffered under. And what you would see through the Old Testament is this refrain where they would build up their resources, they would consolidate their power, they would oppress others, and God would be like, you just became the thing that I freed you from. Learn it again. Right? This is the cycle that we see through the Old Testament. And again, I'm not going to get judgy on them because we go through exactly the same thing, right? And God is teaching us this too, right? But the world's economy, right, which is this, carries the spirit of empire, basically says this. It says, what you need to do is you need to accumulate, right? And accumulation breeds entitlement, right? I accumulated because I earned it, right? I deserve it. Then what I need to do is I need to protect what I have earned, right? And actually, rather than providing peace and prosperity, it actually becomes a burden, because what you end up doing is you have to protect that which you have acquired, which you believe you are entitled to. And that is the spirit of empire. That is the way the world's economy works. And yet it is paraded as this will grant you security and peace. And yet people are weighed down in participating in this economy. You see, God's economy is going to be different from this, right? See, God's economy, as we see in this piece of wisdom literature, is that you receive, you then appreciate or delight in what God has given you, you share what has been given to you, and ultimately that leads to blessing. Of course, God's message and commission to the nation of Israel was, I have blessed you to be a blessing to all nations. This is not a new story. Okay? And so we get this contrast of different economies, different ways of thinking about our stuff, whether it be spiritual, relational, intellectual, physical, or financial. It's like, what economy am I going to buy into? Am I going to be the kind of person who accumulates, feels grateful for what I have, or even entitled for what I have, and then protecting that at all costs? Or am I going to be the kind of person who recognizes that everything is a gift, delights in it, shares in it, and then becomes that blessing that is both refreshed and refreshes others? You see, here in Acts chapter 20, verse 35, we see Paul quote Jesus in what's actually a non-canonical statement. And what by that I mean is, often when people quote Jesus, you assume you'll find it in one of the Gospels. You actually can't find this in one of the Gospels, right? But Paul quotes Jesus as saying, in everything I did, I showed you that by this kind of hard work, we must help the weak, remembering the words the Lord Jesus himself said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. And so this is a statement, again, we don't find in any of the Gospels, but Acts was also written by the Gospel writer of Luke, right? So Luke Acts, right? So there's this sense in which it's like this statement, this principle flowed through Jesus' ministry, and evidently he said it at one point or another, it is more blessed to give than to receive. Now, this Greek word here for blessed or blessed, sometimes it's pronounced, is the word makarios. Now, this is important to understand again as we kind of almost deprogram ourselves to maybe think about blessing as accumulation, right, in the world's empire. Because this word blessed or blessed is exactly the same word that is found in the Beatitudes, which is God's invitation to a better way of living, including the statement, blessed or blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all things or kinds of evil against you because of me. So just be aware that this word blessed and blessed, right, also includes, right, persecution, being insulted, defamation, right, because of Jesus. See, what is being offered here, again, is not just more stuff. It's a holistic level of refreshment when we choose to live God's way, in God's economy versus the world's economy. And I want to just pick this up in what's a really fascinating story here in 1 Kings chapter 17. It's a little bit long, so I'll kind of read a bit, give a bit of context as we go along. It says here in verse 7, sometime later, the brook dried up because there had been no rain in the land. Then the word of the Lord came to him, that is Elijah. Go at once to Zarephath in the region of Sidon and stay there. I have directed a widow there to supply you with food. So he went to Zarephath. When he came to the town gate, a widow was there gathering sticks. He called to her and asked, would you bring me a little water in a jar so I may have a drink? As she was going to get it, he called, and bring me, please, a piece of bread. As surely as the Lord your God lives, she replied, I don't have any bread, only a handful of flour in a jar and a little olive oil in a jug. I'm gathering a few sticks to take home and make a meal for myself and my son, that we may eat it and die. Whew, it's pretty tragic, isn't it? Like the state of affairs. So let me give a bit of context to this particular passage. Now, because of the disobedience of the nature of Israel, because they had chosen empire rather than shalom, their own kingdom rather than God's kingdom, right? And because they had turned to idolatry and the worship of the Baals, Elijah, the prophet of God, of Yahweh, had declared that there would be no rain. And he did this because in Deuteronomy 11, that's what God said would happen. Be careful or you will be enticed to turn away and worship other gods and bow down to them. Then the Lord's anger will burn against you and he will shut up the heavens so that it will not rain and the ground will yield no produce. And you will soon perish for the good from the good land the Lord is giving you. Right, so Elijah isn't making this up. He says, you've been disobedient, you're worshiping the Baal, so I'm prophetically declaring, right, God said this is going to happen and it did. But everyone was affected. Everyone. Especially the vulnerable, right? Which is what happens in a spirit of empire, by the way. The vulnerable are the ones affected by consequence and the spirit of empire. When the natural resources dried up, that is when the stakes were most high, when the brook had dried up, Elijah was directed by God to find and stay with a widow. A widow. And you've got to ask this question, why a widow? Why not a rich person? Why couldn't God say, hey, Elijah, I've got this guy stashed and he's got like some cash. You stay with him. Don't worry, man. He's like a baker. He will serve you such good food. There will be an abundance. No, no, no. It's like a widow. You see, I think that there's a lesson here because the widow would have been the person who was least likely to have a prolonged life, to experience peace, and to experience prosperity, right? Those very things that this piece of wisdom is designed to offer. And so God was teaching something to this woman, God was teaching something to Elijah, and God was teaching something to us. And so initially, he asks for bread, right? Sorry, he initially asked for water, and then as he was going, he asks for bread. I just love this little thing. It's just like, she's like willing to go get the water, and that's a beautiful example of hospitality. And then he's just like, as she's going, he's like, can I also have some bread? Can I push this? Can I push this a little bit further? Knowing that he's been directed by God to go ahead and do this. But then we see the widow, right? We see the widow embody almost every objection that we would naturally have when we feel like we have so little and someone asks something of us. You know, what are our natural objections? I don't have enough. Maybe I'll do it later. I'm barely surviving here. This seems irresponsible. I can't be generous. This seems irresponsible. You know, these are the kind of feelings that we see emerge quite understandably from the widow, and things are going to shift. I'm not like, you know, laying too hard on the widow here, right? But she embodies those things. I don't have enough. Maybe I'll do it later. It doesn't seem responsible. I'm barely surviving myself. I mean, here she is. I'm gathering a few sticks to take home and make a meal for myself and my son that we may eat it and die. I've got nothing. I've got dependence, right? But even so, I love this line here. When God told Elijah to go, he said, go at once to the region of Sidon and stay there. I have directed a widow there to supply you with food. Like I've directed. we don't even know what that looks like, what that felt like. We don't hear the story behind that. And yet somehow God has directed this widow who has nothing, right, to provide for someone who is coming. And the question becomes, how will she or how will we respond to the prompt? How will we respond to the need? Will it be self-preservation? That's the world's economy, right? Or will it be generosity, which is God's economy? Which story are we going to trust? Which story do we believe rules this world ultimately? Again, one person gives freely yet gains even more, and another withholds unduly and yet comes to poverty. Which story are we going to trust? The world's story or what God declares to be true? Because generosity actually begins with trusting the God who provides. And I know that that's easy to kind of say or put on a slide, but that's actually where generosity begins. The prompt, right? I have directed the widow in this setting, in spite of the circumstances that you, by the Elijah, called upon, right, to happen. But that creates an opportunity. It creates a choice. Who am I going to trust? Elijah responds, don't be afraid. Oh, isn't that great? Man, whenever you see don't be afraid, angels, prophets, man, listen, right? It's usually saying what you think needs to be challenged. Don't be afraid. Go home and do as you have said. But first, make a small loaf of bread for me from what you have and bring it to me, and then make something for yourself and your son. Very deliberate order here. First, make the bread for me. Don't wait. Don't wait till you're all good. First, make the bread for me, right? Then make something for yourself and your son. Again, she's been directed. This is a moment. This is a testing and a lesson, right, for anyone who finds themselves in this space. Verse 14, for this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says, the jar of flour will not be used up and the jug of oil will not run dry until the day the Lord sends rain on the land. Now, to be clear, Elijah is actually not asking this woman because he needs bread, right? Because if you actually read prior to this story, he was fed by the ravens. Actually, prior to this story, I didn't put it up on the screen, but just prior to this story, he's hanging out by the river, the brook that dried up, right? And God is delivering food to him via birds, right? No. What he is doing, right, is he is inviting the widow to dependence, right? He's saying, are you going to trust the prompt? Are you going to trust the story? And God regularly asks people to release something before he shows them what he is actually doing. This goes all the way through the Bible. Think about Abraham. Go. Leave your family and go. I'm inviting you to trust first. You got Israel crossing the Jordan. Go first to the promised land. The full picture isn't there yet. The widow. We're going to see it in Jesus with the boy with the loaves. Offer what you have, the loaves and the fish, and then we will see God's provision. Peter letting down the nets and the fish being like filling them up with abundance. Like it so often starts with a step of obedience and dependence. You see, none of these acts, letting down the nets, walking through the Jordan, none of these earn God's provision. They're acts of trust. And they are opportunities to step into the design that God has for the resources he temporarily provides for us. That's what we're talking about, right? God knows the stakes, and he knows that we were created for a deeper life than just self-preservation. He knows that we were created for refreshment that we often miss. He knows this. He's like, you are created for this refreshment and you're missing it. Oh, you keep being afraid and you keep getting sucked in to the spirit of empire. It's just like, man, I made you to be refreshed. And this is why Jesus would commend the widow's offering of her mite, right? That little piece is like, yeah, she's entering into the refreshment of God. And this is why Jesus told the rich young man to sell all that he had and follow him, right? It wasn't because the stuff inherently was bad. It's because of what the stuff represented for this guy. And we know this because he walked away sad because he had much wealth, right? the story hasn't changed. God's like, trust me, trust my economy, trust my provision. Those who refresh others will indeed be refreshed. I mean, the story hasn't changed. It's just so often drowned out. It's drowned out by the news and talk of interest rates. It's drowned out by immense need that can feel overwhelming. It's drowned out in all these kind of ways, both external and internal, right? We need to consistently challenge the narrative of the world. In case you need some Jesus to back this up, Matthew chapter 6, Jesus says, "The eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money." And you might be like, money? How did he go from talking about good eyes and bad eyes to talking about money? Like, what's the connection there? Now, we use idioms all the time, these turns of phrase. And in the first century, that was no exception. Now, just a bit of biblical literacy. A healthy eye or a good eye, ayin tova. And that was a rabbinic idiom for an abundance mindset. It's like, I have a mindset, a way of thinking about the world where there is enough. In fact, there is more, right? And what that does is it stirs a posture of generosity. Versus an unhealthy eye, ayin ra'a, is what's a scarcity mindset. I don't believe that there's enough, right? And ultimately, that makes you stingy. And so sometimes you'll see in the text, even in the translations, it'll be like, we'll talk about generosity and stinginess. But actually, this is ayin tova and ayin ra'a are actually bigger than that. It's actually about a mindset. You see, because a generous person doesn't just give generously, they actually see the world differently. That's the difference of a generous person. They're not just a generous person. They actually see the world differently. They have a healthy eye. They have an abundance mindset, right? They see abundance where others see scarcity. They notice opportunities instead of threats, right? Opportunities, threats, scarcity. Generosity is often a posture before becoming a practice. And Jesus is saying that our generosity and our stinginess, right, affects our whole body. He's like, if your eyes are healthy, right, if you've got an abundance mindset, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, right, if you're stingy, you've got a scarcity mindset, your whole body will be full of darkness. The stakes are high. I mean, I love in verse 23, if the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? It's basically saying if the extent, right, of your generosity is actually stinginess, like if you think your generosity and it's actually stinginess, man, you are so dark. Like, man, that is like some deep darkness. Here you are thinking you're being generous, but it's actually being stingy. You don't have that mindset, right? And it's affecting your whole body. You could almost say if you have that unhealthy eyes, like you may have accumulated and felt entitled and you have been protecting all that kind of stuff, and yet, to use our refreshment language, you are completely dehydrated. Right? You're so dehydrated. Because you were made to both refresh and be refreshed. Generosity shapes our whole body, and it's God's means of refreshing the world. Blessing isn't something that we kind of like store up. It's something that flows through us. And this can come in so many different ways. I think about, say, the family who regularly opens their home. You know, week after week, there are people running through their house. Maybe there's kids running through their house, meals to prepare, toys to put away, heaps of extra work. And on paper, it looks like they're consistently giving something away. Time, energy, privacy, money. And you ask people why they keep on doing it, right? And they'll often tell you that they receive just as much as they give, right? They've built deep friendships. Their kids may have grown up surrounded by people of faith. Their home has become a place of laughter and belonging and encouragement. And they refresh others, but in the process, they themselves are refreshed. Well, think about the person who serves in hospital visitation, right? Fitting it in around their other commitments. like all this stuff, right? They give, and yet at the same time, they are so enriched and blessed by the stories that emerge from those moments. I remember one of my previous bosses at Crosso, Margaret Spicer, she used to say this. She said, if someone is serving in the right place, they should be growing too. Because it's not just about what they give, they should be being refreshed themselves. See, the healthiest generosity doesn't exhaust us. It actually enlarges us. And so we see the response of the widow and her choice in that moment. She went away and did as Elijah had told her. So there was food every day for Elijah and for the woman and her family. For the jar of flour was not used up and the jug of oil did not run dry, in keeping with the word of the Lord spoken by Elijah. And in a miraculous way, God honored, right, her trust, her obedience, and her generosity. The provision didn't make sense. And yet in giving freely, she gained even more. And again, we need to be aware of how we treat the proverb, right? This is not just a kind of, oh, cool, I've got a mathematical formula. So if I do this, then God will give me this. That's not what's going on here, if I haven't made that clear. This is God challenging the economy of the world, inviting us to trust in his provision, teaching us what it looks like to both be refreshed and refreshed others. Because some people are going to open their homes. Others are going to quietly look after people's kids when parents get exhausted so they can breathe. Other people give and offer wisdom or practical skills or encouragement. Some people give money or just make time for someone who feels forgotten. Spiritual, relational, physical, intellectual, financial. Generosity is not measured by the size of the gift, but by the heart that receives from God and then shares with others. So as I wrap up, wisdom literature are tools for the journey, especially in times of pain and scarcity, which we saw in that widow story. When the stakes are high, it's always tempting to submit to the voices of the world. When it hasn't rained in a while, when the brook has dried up, when resources appear limited, it's these times that we ought to be reminded that refreshment, peace, and prosperity ultimately comes from God. Because God created us to live by his economy and not the world's. Because generosity begins with trusting the God who provides, because you were made to both refresh and be refreshed. Again, the world or the empire says, accumulate, feel entitled, preserve. And they don't say, be burdened, but that's what you get. Whereas God in his kingdom says, receive, appreciate, share, and be blessed. And so, with all that you have been entrusted, and we have all been entrusted with something, which story are you going to trust? Because every single day we choose the economy we live in. Every single day. And yet God invites us to trust his story. Let's just take a minute now to just reflect in our own space. And the question I would like you to ask is, what has God given me? And what does it look like this week to choose kingdom rather than empire? Let's just take a minute now to consider this. with that thing or those things in mind, let me pray. God, will we step into your refreshment because you know it is for our good. And I want to thank you, God, for the way that generosity does emanate from your people. God, thank you for the way that we can challenge the economy of the world. And I especially want to pray, not just for personal response, I want to pray for conversations this week. Because I feel like conversations are going to emerge. We talk about our stuff, we talk about the economy, we talk about the way we're choosing to live. And so God, as followers of you, as those who trust you, would we choose your way? Would we invite others to see the world differently? The upside-down kingdom continues to surprise and yet invites us to experience true blessing. And so, God, give us the courage. And may we, particularly in our times where we feel like the stakes are high, choose to be generous and then experience the wealth of your providence. We do not trust in riches, but in him who richly provides. Amen.